Now, I'm sure you all know that piece of music from the Star Wars movie. It's going to show your age now. It goes back to 1977. Well, Star Grazer, an astronomically themed concert by the RTÉ Concert Orchestra, will take place on Thursday next, 28th of November, at the National Concert Hall. It will feature the entire Star Wars suite, and I'm told not often heard in its entirety, and Arthur Bliss's Things to Come. But a very special element will be a full multimedia production of Holst's The Planets, with a choreography of planets projected on a screen above the orchestra. That's all thanks to a gentleman called Andy Dulf, who's a storyteller, a sound engineer, and a visual projection specialist who has travelled to Ireland, especially for the concert, all the way from the United States of America. Andy, you're very welcome. You've just got in, I believe.
Yeah, got in yesterday from Boston, well, near Boston, Massachusetts.
And what do you do and what have you got to do with the concert?
I like to say that I'm a technological storyteller, that I use a suite of technological tools to tell stories in powerful ways. And one of those ways is what I'm doing here, which is a projection design for Holst's incredible suite of music, The Planets.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the second half of the concert program. And so what I've done is taken imagery that comes from space, imagery from NASA and ESA missions and telescopes around the world, and also from a computer simulation system called Digital Sky 2, which runs some of the major planetariums in the world and lets me fly through a 3D model of the universe, and have blended all of this together into a sort of symphony of visuals that accompany the symphony of music that Holst weaves for us in this piece, which is just an amazing, amazing piece of music.
And I take it you like the music in the first place, do you?
Adore it. It when I first did this, I was wondering if I was going to get bored with it. And because, you know, I spent 3 months living with this score every single day. And I sometimes that works out well and sometimes not so much. And still to this day, every time I rehearse this piece, every time I go through it, I discover new things that I understand about, oh, he's getting that sound by using this combination of instruments. I never realized that was there before. Or this little turn of rhythm pushes this forward in this way. It's
so are you
amazing.
Making the planets dance in a way?
Pretty much. And it's all live. That often when orchestras want to work with visuals, they get a TV producer or a film producer.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they do is make a movie because that's what they do. And the problem with that is that then the conductor has to follow the movie because it can't change. What I do is run the show live, sitting at a computer. And I am sitting there reading the conductor's score, which I've marked cues in. And at specific points, I trigger each next element. So whatever tempo the conductor takes in the performance, the visuals stay with him all the time, rather than him having to adapt to me. Because this is really about enhancing the music, not controlling
it. How do you do that?
I use a piece of software called QLab, which is built for doing sound and music in theater. And it literally, I'm sitting looking at my screen with a list of each of the bits that's coming next that I've programmed.
Yeah, I was going to say, you must have had something ready in advance.
Oh, that's right. No, it's each visual, each of the choices, and the sequence they're going to come in is all chosen.
Yeah.
The only thing I'm doing live is the timing. So it's just when I hit the button, it knows, okay, now fade out this video, this piece of video, and fade in this still image, which slowly moves across the screen in this particular way. And it'll keep doing that until I hit the button the next time, in which it fades that out and brings in the next one.
Well, talk me through a piece, because I know you've got a little piece of music.
So let's take an example.
Selected for us. Now, you're not going to see this. It's on the radio.
Right.
But if you want to see it and hear it together, you'll be able to do that when the concert takes place at the National Concert Hall, which is on November 28th.
Yeah. So this is from the end of the movement, which is called Uranus the Magician.
Mm-hmm.
And it's worth noting before we play this that Holst wasn't writing about the planets that are in the sky, because we didn't really understand how magnificent they were just before the First World War when Holst was writing. We didn't have the instrumentation to see the depth and the beauty that we now commonly know with images from the Hubble and so forth. So Holst wasn't writing about the planets of astronomy.
What was he writing about?
Astrology. He's writing about the planets as astrological forces of influence. And so hence the movements Mars, the bringer of war, Venus, the bringer of peace. These are based on the astrological influences of these planets. And so...
So his music kind of reflects their character.
That's right.
So to speak.
That's right. And so I choose imagery based on the music as much as based on the word at the beginning that says which planet it is.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, yeah.
And so I have restricted myself to images of the universe, images of space, but that's really the only restriction. Other than that, I start each movement with an image of the planet which it's named for. And from there,
you can go anywhere.
We go wherever we go. And so when I was listening to this piece, which comes at the end of Uranus, I thought about it and I had was sort of scratching my head for a minute. So let's hear it.
Yeah, maybe the listeners can have a few ideas in their heads too.
So what do you think of that?
It sounds very ominous.
It does.
Sounds like something, something really nasty is going to happen.
And in fact, I vividly remember as I was working through the score, sort of laying it out the first time, what was going to happen in different parts of it. I was sitting on my parents' porch and it was a beautiful spring day and I'm listening in my headphones and I heard that. And I immediately had this very vivid image with the loudest part of that, it's this bit. I had this image of a nuclear explosion. It was just immediately, oh, well, that's a mushroom cloud. And I thought about it. Okay, but that's not the realm of what I'm putting in this piece. I'm not going to literally use an image of a nuclear explosion. That's a different piece. And so I thought about it and I realized, well, there's something even bigger and even more powerful and more destructive than a nuclear bomb that exists in astronomy. It's the supernova, a star dying in a violent explosion. And I thought, okay, well, that's easy. So clearly, this is a supernova. And so I built that movement so that right before that happens, we fly to a view of a particular star, the star Betelgeuse in the constellation Orion the Hunter. And that star, it's Orion's right shoulder, and it is bright red when it's in the sky. And that's the star that we know of that's most likely considered to supernova sometime soon. Of course, soon to astronomers is, you know, the next million years or so. But so I took that and then created this effect of an explosion of the supernova of it. And then as that calms down, the whole screen ends up growing till it's completely white. And then that fades away and we see an image of a particular type of nebula, which is what is left after a supernova. Now, a long time after, and I'm compressing time by, you know, some millions of years, but that's okay. And so then I use this supernova remnant, and that's the last image of that movement. And then we begin the last movement, Neptune, the Mystic, with a little bit of the planet, because as I say, I wanted to start each movement with the image of that planet. But then we're right back into this sequence of these extraordinarily beautiful nebula, which are supernova remnants. And they're just amazing sort of weavings. And in fact, what they are in space is glowing clouds of gas and dust, but they make extraordinarily beautiful and, in a way, very mystical pictures. So it lent itself very well to what the music does there. And that's sort of what this whole process is about, is fitting the rhythm of the images, the visual rhythm, to the sonic rhythm and texture that Holst creates just so, so beautifully.
I wonder what he'd make of your work.
I would...
Because I can clearly hear you love his work, and you love astronomy too, by the sounds of it. Are you an astronomer?
I am an amateur astronomer, I would say. I was a planetarian.
I mean, you're living every word you're saying there. I can see it.
Well, it's true. I'm passionate about it, but it's not my formal training.
Okay.
I was a planetarium educator for a while.
I see.
And so I'm very comfortable particularly talking about astronomy to a lay audience. When you talk about astronomy to astronomers, mostly what you're doing is lots and lots and lots of calculus, which I don't understand at all.
Very technical, yeah.
Extremely.
As I'm listening to you speaking there, you're creating very, very vivid images for our radio listeners, which is fantastic. A hard thing to do, but you do it so naturally.
Well, I think that that's part of why I'm able to do this work. And thank you very much for saying that.
No, I mean it sincerely,
The key to this work, whether it's the planets or any other piece, is how do you visualize something which is inherently auditory?
Mm-hmm.
How do you see music? Because, you know, the little dots and lines on the paper that the orchestra reads really isn't music. It's a set of instructions for how to make the music. But it isn't music any more than the recipe for a chocolate cake is a chocolate cake. It takes the skill and the practice and the training to turn that into music, this thing which can only exist in sound. And so how do we make that into picture? And the way I like to talk about it is by feeling what is the story that we're telling here. And sometimes it's a very clear, I've done some pieces where there's a very clear story in terms you could easily write down in a book, you know, that this is a piece that's about the history of a war and we're getting ready and now we're going to battle and this is the aftermath and so forth. And with the planets, it's not that. It's more like poetry in that it's extremely evocative, but it's not concrete. And so now I'm trying to put imagery with it, which is very concrete. And so it's a matter of thinking about, well, this might fit, and I would try it. And I would watch it and listen to the music and think about, well, how does that work? Does it help me to feel the music more intensely?
And does it?
And if it does, I've done it right.
Well, I think you've done it right. It certainly sounds like you've done it right. Tell me, back to my original question.
Sure.
Because I can tell that you love his work and you love astronomy, as I was saying. But how do you think Holst would view your work and your adaptation of his music?
I would like to think that he would be pleased. I'm honestly not sure, because it was such an unusual thing. There was not a lot of the idea of putting visuals with concert performances at that time.
Mm.
I mean, the technology didn't exist.
No, it didn't exist. You turned up and you sat down and you appreciated what you heard, and then you kind of left.
And so that being such a modern thing, I don't know that I know enough about Holst to know whether he would say, oh, it's distracting the audience, or whether he would, as I hope he would, feel that it allows people to go much more deeply into having a full experience of the music.
Mm.
And I think...
I think the latter.
I hope so.
I mean, I think if you're sitting there in the National Concert Hall and you're hearing the RT Concert Orchestra perform that wonderful music, and then your eyes now are fixated on the images on the screen and they take you on that journey through space, I think that'll be absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
I think people have a better appreciation for the music. I certainly would have a better appreciation for the music. And what you said there, I mean, he wrote it from an astrological point of view, not an astronomical point of view. That's very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. It is something, and I think that with the visuals, it makes it particularly friendly to people who might be a little bit nervous about the idea of going to an orchestra concert, you know, because you always have something to focus on. And this music, while very significant, real, quote unquote, classical concert music, is very, very evocative. And then we add picture to it, and there's another level of evocative.
It sounds fantastic. Tell me, did the RT Concert Orchestra contact you? Had you done this for somebody else before?
Or I did the piece 3 years ago with the Portsmouth, New Hampshire Symphony Orchestra. And RTE Concert Orchestra folks found a trailer that I did for the piece when I did it with Portsmouth that was still on YouTube. And I got an email out of the blue essentially asking if they could license my film to use for their concert. And I wrote back and said, well, it's a little more complicated than that. And that it's something I run live. I have to come with it. But if you can bring me to Dublin, I'd be more than happy to do it. And fortunately, they said yes. And here I am. And
I think it's going to be a wonderful concert. I think you're going to be sold out because it's for everybody. It's for people who love music. It's for people who are into astronomy. It's also for people who are into astrology. And it's also for the layman who just has a passing kind of care for it, but not much more than that.
That's right.
And what a perfect time to be doing it.
Yeah.
I'd suggest that all the thousands of people who auditioned for Star Wars at the weekend should get their butts around to the National Concert Hall and, you know, brush up in case they get the call back.
That's right.
Yeah, it'd be a good idea, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
So let me tell you that Star Grazer, The Comet Encounter, performed by the RT Concert Orchestra with Andy Dolph, will take place on Thursday, November 28th. That's this coming Thursday at the National Concert Hall at 8 p.m. Tickets are on sale from the National Concert Hall from €11, which isn't a bad price at all the way up to €38, but from €11, which is terrific value. And what a nice thing to do, and what a lovely place to spend some time this coming Thursday. Andy, a joy to meet you. Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks for
having popping
me.
In. And good luck with the concert. How long will you stay in Ireland after the concert, or will you be gone on Friday?
No, I've got to go home on Friday because I actually have already, before I found out about this, had made plans to leave on Monday with my mother for a holiday at Disney World.
Oh!
And so I go home, I have enough time to do laundry, hopefully adjust to a new time zone, and then we're back in a plane again.
Yeah, and the movie's coming out, I think, next Friday, as it happens, Saving Mr. Banks,
yes.
Which is all about Walt Disney and the Mary Poppins story played by Tom Hanks. Well, obviously he's playing Walt Disney and not Mary Poppins, but at any rate, it sounds like it's going to be a great movie. I'm also told you're a hypnotist, are you?
A little bit. Yeah, I do. I have a background in stage hypnosis, although it's not something, it's something I played with and never really made a career. I spent a lot of time studying it and thought that I might make a career out of it. And who knows, maybe someday.
Do you believe it's possible to hypnotize someone?
Absolutely.
You really do? I don't believe a word of it.
You have,
impossible.
You have been hypnotized at least once in the last 24 hours. Guaranteed.
but go on, then explain.
Okay. You know that feeling of sort of floating when you're half awake and half asleep? You know, if you're sort of falling asleep?
Yeah, yes.
That's hypnosis. If we put you on an EEG machine, on a brainwave meter, that's hypnosis. If you have ever been at the movies and have become so involved in what you were watching that you forgot that you were sitting there watching a movie, that all that existed in your experience is the movie that you're experiencing.
Last night, I went to see Parkland last night.
And that's hypnosis.
That's watching a movie. And getting engrossed in the story.
But see, that's the thing.
That's not somebody hypnotizing me.
That hypnosis is really, it's not the thing that people envision where, you know, where somebody's going to swing a watch in front of you and take control of you or anything like that. It's about guiding the mind willingly. Mm. And if you're not willing, it'll never work.
Exactly. So you must want to do something in the first place.
Absolutely. But it can guide you into a place of relaxation that a lot of us have a very difficult time getting to without some help. And once we're in this deep, comfortable, relaxed state, it allows us to sort of turn up the volume on our imaginations. And so stage hypnosis, where, you're having people believe they're a celebrity or that they believe they're stuck to a chair or something like that, it's because they want to do it, because they think it's fun. And it is fun to experience.
Yeah, but they're not hypnotized. I don't believe that. I think they just go along with it. It's kind of, there's a touch of peer pressure about it. So they're on the stage. They've been told now there's a leprechaun running around the stage. Go catch him. And they think, well, I'm up here now. I better do something. I better pretend. And if I were to do it and be wide awake or appear to be wide awake and not hypnotizing, I'm going to look stupid. So because I'm supposed to be hypnotized and I'm playing along with it, sure, I'll just do it anyway. I'm going to get a few laughs. It'll be something to talk about later on.
There definitely are shows.
15 minutes of fame.
There are definitely shows where that happens.
All of them. Come on, Andy, you know it's true.
When you're trained in hypnosis, you learn to recognize some fairly subtle physiological indications about how the eyelids twitch, about how people's breathing changes and so forth, that lets you read what their state is. And you can really tell. A good stage hypnotist can tell who's faking and who's not. And the people who are faking get sent right back to their seats because the people who are really hypnotized are the ones who put on the best show.
No, a good hypnotist can tell the ones who are going to play along. That's what I believe.
Maybe so.
Definitely. Well, come on, hypnotize me. Come on.
It's not that fast.
It happens like that on stage. He goes over, he puts his hand, and you're under. And they're under. It takes about a second.
Yeah, so that's a very good performer who has the audience not realizing what the actual hypnotic induction is. That all of the time when it looks like he's just talking to the people and explaining what hypnosis is and how it works and talking about getting relaxed and all of this sort of stuff, he's actually guiding them into hypnosis. It's just in a way that's not obvious. And then once that's established, then you can do things with triggers that are very dramatic, you know, where they say sleep and everybody falls down, you know, their heads all fall forward, that sort of thing. But they were already hypnotized.
Okay, let me give you an example. I've been to see lots of stage hypnotists and I enjoy the shows for the nonsense that it is. And they get them, and you're a stripper in a strip show. And they strip very slowly, but they never take anything off. So they're not that hypnotized. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well,
they go through the motions of doing the little movements, the little bit of choreography that they make up on the spot, but they don't take anything off. If they were really hypnotized, they'd be down to their birthday suit.
Well, and again, that's something that is something that it's important for the performer to manage. Because in most hypnosis shows, you don't want them to get down to their birthday suit. And so you worry.
Why did I pay 20 quid?
You word your suggestions in a very specific way that you're giving very specific kinds of instructions. Mm. And often the audience won't notice, even though it's right in front of them, because they don't care. But often the instructions are very specifically not to actually take anything off. It's all about, there's in stage hypnosis, there are two very different crafts that are both taking place that are very important. There's understanding and being able to do the hypnosis. Mm. And then there's also understanding how to make it a good show for the audience. And I would argue that if you are doing stage hypnosis, I mean, you need to do the hypnosis well enough that you're not going to cause anybody problems, of course, and that you're, you know, not going to have them so out of it that they fall off the edge of the stage or something like that. But so long as everybody's safe, the most important thing is to put on a good show for the audience.
Yeah,
I think that's what you're there for.
A good hypnotist is a good stage performer.
That's right.
It's all about psychology. It's all about the voice, the use of the human voice, you know, to really get inside of the person. But I do not believe that people are actually hypnotized. And I will never believe that. Never. You can hypnotize me now and try to get me to believe it, and I won't. I just don't believe it.
But see,
I believe you believe it.
But if you tell me that, you'll never be hypnotized to believe it, because you can never change what somebody really believes.
You see, I've got to be a willing subject, as you said.
That's it.
You've got to be able to spot the willing subjects, the people who are prepared to go along with it, who don't necessarily believe it, who are prepared to go along with it.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right. Anyway, it's lovely to meet you, Andy. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you too.
I really hope the concert goes well.
Thank you.
It's called again Stargrazer, the Comet Encounter, the RTE Concert Orchestra with Andy Dolph in the second half of the show, and it's taking place at the National Concert Hall on Thursday, November 28th at 8 p.m. Tickets from €11, and more details on our website, rte.ie/Mooney.